Committee of the Special, I have a hard time with this, with the Senate Special Committee on Budget for June 14, 2005, and open a work session on SB 5603. Mr. Bender. For committee's information, we will run through all 15 recommendations, and we'll have questions during that period. Anybody has questions? Then when we get through all 15, we will take a motion on the 15 recommendations. Then we will do the performance measure, take a motion on that, and then we'll take a final motion to take action to the full special committee. So, Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate Bill 5603 is the bill that's being used on the Senate side for the Department of Higher Education's operating budgets. This is one of two principal budget bills for the Department of Higher Education that you will be working on this session. The other budget bill is the capital construction bill, which is entirely separate by constitutional requirement. This bill does not approve or consider any of the various capital construction projects that the governor is recommending that you approve. And therefore, in today's discussion, I will not be referring to them, and you are not being asked to make any decisions on the capital construction projects. Instead, this budget deals with the operations expenditures of the Department of Higher Education. I have distributed to you a memo with today's date labeled the LFO Recommendation, Department of Higher Education Operations, Senate Bill 5603, which I would like to go through with your indulgence. I did send a draft memo out to you late yesterday. I don't know if any of you have been able to see that. I will point out that there are some minor changes in this version compared to the draft version. They're very small, and I will point them out where they occur. But in general, you'll see that this memo is, for most intents and purposes, identical to the one that you received yesterday. Before we begin, if I may just ask you to look at another item I've distributed to you, which is a copy of Senate Bill 5513. This, of course, is not the bill that you're in work session for today, but Senate Bill 5513 is the bill that was introduced in Ways and Means for the Department of Higher Education's operating budget. And the numbers that you see on this bill are the numbers that are consistent with the governor's recommended budget. What we would do is, if you approve the LFO recommendation or you make some modifications to the LFO recommendation, we will essentially ask legislative counsel to draft up a set of amendments that will be in this structure that would then be amendments to 5603 and would be available for the full committee when they take their vote on this bill. I just wanted to point out a couple of things. If you look at this bill, it does show some important information about how the department's budget is organized and structured in the state budget. If you look at this bill, you'll see on Section 1, there are a number of general fund appropriation line items. So these are the line item appropriations that are provided to the Oregon University System. These are the traditional ones. There's no change in the structure. But you can see that the first item there on line 9, education and general services, that refers to most of the activity that the state provides support for the ongoing operations of the Department of Higher Education. So this includes most campus operations for instruction, for public service, research. It also includes the centralized operations of the department, such as the chancellor's office and other functions or expenses that are paid centrally. The other items for which there is a line item appropriation, the next three are the three statewide public service programs of the department. These programs are housed at Oregon State University, but do have functions statewide, and that's why they have their name. But each of those has a separate general fund appropriation line item. Then there is an appropriation for general fund also for debt service. on both Article 11G bonds and certificates of certain certificates of participation. And there will have to be some change in this language when it is drafted, not in the numbers, it turns out, but in some of the language. We need to make some corrections here, but we will have those available just to make a technical correction for the full committee to make sure that it's clear that it includes certificates of participation as well as Article 11G bonds. On the back, if you look at Section 2, you'll see four other line items that stick out in Section 2. These are other fund limitations, and the limitations, again, apply to the same programs that the general fund appropriations did. So you have one for education and general services, and then one for each of the statewide public service programs. The way that the universe, that the department finances its activities is it takes the general fund that you're appropriating in line one for a particular program and combines the funds with the other funds that are in Section 2, and the combination of those funds are used to finance the various programs in these areas. The major, for example, the major program other funds that you see represented on page 2, line 4, the major other funds for the education and general services are tuition and fees, student tuition and fees. So those are combined with general fund to support those programs. But there are other other funds that we can talk about in more detail if you'd like. But this is the basic structure. There are other sections for the Sports Action Lottery Program and for some of the debt service, but this is the basic structure.
Yes.
On the extension service, on the other funds, there's about a $7 million decrease from where we have $5 million decrease from the previous balance. What are those other funds in extension, and where did that money go?
The extension service other funds are come from a number of sources. And the extension service is actually funded cooperatively between by the state, by the federal government, and by counties. And the other funds that you see here are primarily funds that are being provided by the federal government. I forget right now what the name of the act is that provides funds for the extension service, but there's a federal act that provides funding by formula that the state combines with the general fund and with contributions by counties that are also included in this other fund amount. Those are the primary other fund activities. There's also some service charges. The extension service has a seed certification program, I believe, and funds, for example, for that program are included, but they would not amount to a large portion of that total. You had mentioned the decline, the level, you're correct, in the legislatively approved budget this time around was $27.2 million, and the other funds in this budget, in this recommendation, are about $22.8 million. So there is a decline there in revenues from these other sources.
You're not familiar with where that decline came from specifically, though, just in...
I could try to get more information. I don't know if there's anyone here from the department who would have it, but I have the information here, and let me just look for this.
Please identify yourself for the
record. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Nancy Heiligman, Assistant Chancellor for Budget and Financial Policy for the University System. The changes in the budget there are two different sources. One is federal funding. The projection for federal funds is declining slightly, and also the fund balance for the extension service. As the federal funding was projected to decline, the Extension Service spent down some of their fund balance over the past biennium.
So, in other words, there was a portion that had been retained historically in the, that appropriation that was the fund balance, and that's declining.
That's correct, as well as their projections for federal funds. It was planned as a phase down in the program over this current biennium.
Senator Whitson.
Yeah, just a little. You understand that?
Let me. No, I thank you very much for jogging my memory on this issue. The other fund, essentially, what Ms. Heiligman was saying is that the other funds that were approved in the 0305 level, that $27 million, was actually not supportable on a long-term basis because the revenue was not the $27 million. The revenue was less, and the agency was spending out of accumulated fund balances that it had of those monies. Now that those fund balances are no longer available, the budget shows that the expenditures are being reduced to a level that is sustainable.
On the 2003-05 biennium, there was a deficit spending going on there.
There was, and there was the Legislative Assembly was aware that this had been a concern and did actually attempt to address this in the $27 million amount that you saw. And as Ms. Heiligman said, there was essentially a plan to bring this expenditure level down to a sustainable level over a period of time, though I do not believe, I believe that there has been information that came in since the last legislative session as to the extent of what the fund balance availability is. So the $27 million was based on a plan that was more than a one biennium reduction, but it was also based on information that later was revised after the session, and it may not have been it's not clear whether the full $27 million would have been approved two sessions ago at all, if the information subsequently was known at that time.
So this projected budget this year would be a continuation of that phase down of the...
Yes, and I think we're now at the sustainable level.
Senator Woodson, yes, we do believe that the program is at a sustainable level on the other fund side at this point. It was knowing that this reduction in federal funding was coming, the program made a sort of a long-term plan over 3 years to bring the funding to a sustainable level. However, the Extension Service and the other statewide public service programs did sustain cuts in the governor's budget that were below the essential budget level on the general fund side for 0507.
Mr. Chair, Bill McGee from Department of Administrative Services. Just a clarification. The reductions, particularly in the Extension Service, were not a reduction to essential budget level, but a correction of essential budget level. Because of the reductions in the other fund's revenue, there was increases in the general fund calculation that the system made, and the governor's budget made corrections to that in a number of different areas, and that's where you see that adjustment occurring.
I think I understand that, Mr. Chair. Basically, we have funding extension at an inadequate service at an inadequate level, but we're going to continue to do that.
Yes.
Right?
That's correct.
Please proceed, Mr. Becker.
If I may, Mr. Chair and members, refer you to the memo now. On page one of that memo, you will see a table there that actually identifies, if the LFO recommendation is approved, what the funding levels would be for the Department of Higher Education's operating budget. That is to say, the result of approving the various recommendations would lead to these levels of funding and position authority in the budget, which you would see would be approximately $684.6 million in general fund. That would be an increase from the current level of $659.9 million and an increase over the governor's level, which was $668.2 million. But if I may go through the individual recommendations that lead to this result, I will start with recommendation one in my memo, which starts at the bottom of page one. This is the recommendations in package 801, which are the adjustments that apply to all state agency budgets. And in this case, there are two of them. One of them is to rebudget the amount for attorney general charges because the hourly rate has been reduced since the governor put the budget together from $119 per hour down to $111 per hour. The second reduction...
Mr. Chair, can I just make a comment on that? I
mean, yes.
It's not really a reduction. Actually, just a clarification, and something, a question I like to ask on that. I mean, the hourly rate now is about $98
for attorney general's rate. The governor's budget raised it to $119. It's been characterized as a reduction to 111, but in fact, what we're doing is we're raising it $10 or $11 or $12 per hour. That's about a 12% increase.
That's correct.
What would be the significant savings if it was only a 5% increase? Do you have any idea of what within this budget and overall?
I mean, we're here in a situation where I think a lot of us are very concerned about this budget, and you know,
I would just soon send the money to the children as to the attorneys, basically.
I don't know. One of the responses to that would be, if you saw the in this particular budget, we're going from 119 to 111, and the reduction in this budget is, as you've indicated, about $121,000. One of the realities, and maybe Senator Gourley would want to respond to this, is that although the subcommittee recommended dropping from 119 to 111, which was the governor's recommendation, the 111 still resulted in some cuts in the Department of Justice. It's simply because the Department of Justice personnel are paid for largely, not entirely, but largely by assessments to agencies in this particular area. And their costs have grown just like the rest of state government in terms of compensation. So even at 111, we were still making some reductions within the Department of Justice. I think that would be a fair...
Yeah, a follow-up. So, I mean, that goes back to we have to make some hard choices here. My choice is if I have to choose between paying lawyers more money or making sure some of these programs are funded for students, I would choose the students. So,
okay.
So as long as that is made part of the record.
Okay. Please proceed.
And thank you, Senator, for pointing out that the what we're referring to as a reduction really isn't a reduction from the prior biennium. Let me clarify that all... The entire memo discusses changes to the governor's recommended budget. So reduction will refer to a reduction from that. An increase would refer to an increase from that. And they're not references to the current biennium levels. The other reduction in package 801 is a reduction to reflect the fact that the governor's budget's PERS contribution costs at 15.52% of salary, but we now know that the PERS board has established rates at 14.63% of salary. So the reductions that you see in the table on page 2 show by fund type and program area the reductions that we are proposing or recommending to you to bring the budgeted amount down to the actual 14.63% of salary. So package 801 contains those two adjustments, the PERS adjustment and the AG hourly rate adjustment. Next one?
Yes.
Recommendation 2 refers to the package 802 adjustments. We have only one adjustment in this case in package 802, and it refers to the Sports Action Lottery Program, which is a relatively small program in the department that receives a dedicated source of funding. The
the receipts from the sports action lottery game are all dedicated by statute to the Department of Higher Education, and it's, the statute identifies two purposes or two uses for those funds. 88% of the funds are used to support intercollegiate athletic programs that are non-revenue. Generally, they're used for the non-revenue sports. And the other 12% is used to fund scholarships for graduate students. And these scholarships are not athletic related. They are simply scholarships for graduate students. The governors will recommending, LFO is recommending, that you increase the lottery fund's expenditure limitation by $182,342 because the forecast for the revenues from the sports action lottery game are higher now than they were at the time that the governor put his recommendation together. With this increase, if you approve this increase, this will leave a $300,000 ending balance to carry forward into the next biennium for this program. We also have some technical adjustments.
Oh, before you get to that, Chair, I have a question. We had a bill on the Senate floor about sports action lottery. I believe that was a constitutionally created function, and then it may be a referral to ask the voters to get rid of it. Am I correct about that?
We have a bill that is in the Senate. I don't believe it's come to the floor.
Okay, so it's not come to the floor for vote. I've just seen it floating around the Senate and been asked about it. I see. Okay. And I was wondering, because that was created by Constitution, wasn't it?
I believe that's statutory. The sports action lottery component is statutory.
The lottery in general was the constitutional, lottery, yes. But the sports action lottery was a statutory?
Yes, the legislature set that up specifically to provide funding for those programs that I just mentioned in higher ed.
Okay, and then my question is, if that bill passes this session, how does that impact this budget year?
To adjust.
Yeah, you would need to make an adjustment to the higher ed budget to reflect the passage of that bill. This budget recommendation is based on current law and is not...
Right. Well, I understand that. We can never make recommendations based on what's floating around the building because you never know until we sign and die what the heck we're going to be doing. My next question then is, should such a measure pass, this... We're probably going to get this budget approved before then. Would that be something that we've done in the emergency board?
No. Actually, there would be some adjustments that are done at the end of session based on legislation that passes that might modify budgets. You have a reconciliation budget at the end.
Okay.
But I believe, and I don't want to actually get into that other bill, but I believe it contains an alternative revenue source that would not, that the whole...
That makes it revenue neutral?
I don't know if it makes it revenue neutral. That's why I don't really want to get into a discussion of it.
Okay.
The whole purpose of the bill is that the NCAA will not hold some events here because we basically bet on collegiate athletics. And there are some proponents that would like to have the NCAA hold some of those tournaments here.
Which brings economic development
right
into our state.
But there are a bunch of issues.
Okay. All right. Well, then I'm just sort of thinking out loud and appreciate that you've allowed me to indulge in that thinking.
Okay. Please proceed.
The next recommendation is for a technical adjustments pass.
Yes, Senator Whitson.
I'm sorry, Ms. Bender. Perhaps I just didn't hear this, but you have a services and supplies, and you have special payments. Which of those is athletics, and which of those is graduate tuition?
The services and supplies are the athletic programs, and the special payments are the graduate student scholarships.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
If there are no other questions on Recommendation 2, I'll move ahead to Recommendation 3, which is a package which we're labeling as Package 811, Technical Adjustments in the Operations Budget. Two of these three, there are three elements here. Two of them were
proposed or requested by the governor as technical adjustments to the governor's recommended budget. And the first of the three that I'm going to list was not specifically included there, but we are recommending this as a technical adjustment. The first technical adjustment refers to an increase, or is to increase, the other fund's expenditure limitation in the education and general program area by $26,598,484 and to approve 119 positions in the education and general program area. What this reflects, or what this, the reason we recommend this, is for the following. The governor's recommended budget, it approves tuition increases, and tuition increases that are approved in the governor's recommended budget average about 5% the first year of the biennium and 4% the second year, if you look at all types of tuitions. If you look at the tuitions being paid by Oregon resident undergraduates, the tuition increases average about 6.8% the first year and 5% the second, which you've probably heard stated as 7% and 5%, because usually that 6.8 is rounded up. But it's actually 6.8 the first year and 5% the second year for resident undergraduates. The expenditure limitation that was in the governor's budget, though, does not allow the revenues from these tuition increases to be spent. There's sort of a disconnect there. So what we are recommending here is that you increase the expenditure limitation to make it consistent with the revenues that would be generated under the tuition rate increases in the governor's recommended budget. That's why we see it as a technical adjustment. Later, as you'll see, there is a package to reduce the rate of increase in tuition to below the 6.8% and the 5%, but this will get the expenditure limitation to the right starting point, so then when you consider that additional package, the adjustment in that additional package will keep the, will keep the expenditure limitation consistent with the tuition rates that you're approving.
It's actually 2 minutes off from what it's supposed to be.
That was the 145 flyover plant flyover. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Okay. Please proceed.
So we recommend that change, and also an acknowledgement that tuition revenues, also the revenue figure, it wasn't only the expenditure figure, but the revenue figure should be adjusted to show the revenues that would be collected at those tuition rates. The second technical adjustment is to add 362 positions and 362 FTE to the education and general program area. This was just an omission from the governor's recommended budget in error.
The positions were already there.
The count, you see, positions are budgeted differently for the Department of Higher Education than they are for most state agency budgets, because the positions don't refer to specific identified positions. They refer to the authority overall to hire, and the budget adjustments excluded authority to hire 362 that they should not have excluded, because the funding is there to support them.
Okay.
And then the third of the three adjustments are a shift in the budgeting for payment of state government service charges. This adjustment does not affect general fund. In fact, none of these adjustments in Package 811 have a general fund impact. The state government service charges, as is shown in the table on page 3, shifts just slightly less than $5.2 million from various other funds, non-limited other funds, to other funds, limited, for the payment of these state government service charges. And this is a correction to reflect how the department will have to pay for these state government service charges. Some of the non-limited funds that had been budgeted are really not available for that purpose, so they will pay for them out of their other funds, limited, instead.
Please proceed.
Recommendation 4 refers to a policy package in the governor's budget. This is the Enrollment Growth Package 101. As you know, policy packages are placed in the governor's budget when there is a recommendation from him to either expand or reduce budgeting from the essential budget level. The governor included a package to increase the other funds expenditure limitation in the education in general program by $22.7 million. What that is designed to allow is it's designed to allow the tuitions that are going to be generated, tuition and fee revenues that are to be generated from projected growth in enrollments next biennium, to allow those to actually be spent. In the essential budget level calculation, higher ed does not have an adjustment for enrollment growth. So if you're expecting more students and they're going to be bringing in more tuition, that has to be added as a policy package, and that's what is done here. We do recommend approval of that so that the available tuition revenues may be spent. The next item is a policy package, which in this budget is number 102, and is called More, Better, Faster. There is a similar policy package in the community college budget, which I believe you're tentatively scheduled to do next week, and also in the Department of Education budget. What the funding in these three budgets is for, it is to help establish an integrated K-12 student data system that will allow the transfer, facilitate the transfer of student data between high schools, community colleges, and higher ed institutions.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Yes. Bender, Mr. Bender, I think you misspoke. You said a K-12 student data system.
K-16. I didn't speak. I apologize.
That's fine.
We recommend the following, and this is consistent with chairs of both budget committees are asking you to approve, is the following, that essentially the appropriation not be approved, but not approved for appropriation to the department, that instead you transfer it to a special purpose appropriation to the emergency board, and that the three departments that would receive funds would come to the emergency board basically with a more specific plan to request allocation of the funds at that time. We do, though, recommend that you not transfer the entire amount to the emergency board. We recommend that you reduce the amount by $95,000. The $95,000 represents the expenditures in the package for computer hardware and software that would reside at the college campuses, and also that would be used to train the college personnel in the use of the new system. We recommend that that be reduced and be paid for by the campus budgets, but that the developmental costs, which are remaining, be financed from this appropriation. So we recommend that you appropriate the remaining $2,081,250 to the emergency board as a special purpose appropriation. And we also recommend the budget note there, which describes the purposes of the special purpose appropriation, and also describes the expectations for the Department of Education, and the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development to report to the emergency board on the design, architecture, and total cost to complete the data system, and report on the timeline to completion and implementation and the expected outcomes when they request the emergency board allocation. LFO will have an identical budget note in its recommendation to you for community college budget.
And we approved a similar budget note in the Department of Education budget.
Okay, so this is the
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
What is the direction to the university system with regard to when they are to make this report to the e-board. I'm missing that detail.
There is not a specific date as requested. However, the fund, the request will have to come before the December 2006 emergency board meeting. I'm looking at the bolded language at the first paragraph on page 4. You can see the last sentence of that bolded language says any monies remaining unallocated and unobligated on December 1, 2006 would become available to the emergency board for any lawful purpose. Therefore, if they are not able to convince the emergency board that they have a proposal that the emergency board would like to fund prior to December 2006, the funds are no longer reserved for that purpose. I would expect, though, that they would come forward earlier because they would want to begin development of the project earlier, but that would be the absolute deadline under this proposal.
Mr. Chair, yes. I would ask that we get something on the record from the university system that states what their understanding is and what their intent is with regard to when they would make that report.
Mr. Chancellor, would
available?
You like to come forward? If you'd like to state what direction you've received from your board and
Chair
Devlin,
thank you, Chair Devlin. For the record, George Pernsteiner, Acting Chancellor of Oregon University System. Thank you for the question. It is our intention, because we've done a lot of the design work already, that the higher education portion of this system we could bring to the emergency board probably at in the early fall of this year, because we would want to bring the system up as quickly as we could in terms of our ability to accept transcripts and other information from the high schools and community colleges.
Very good. Mr. Chair, thank you very much, Chancellor. Do we have the same understanding from the other partners in terms of when they would be ready to report?
My general feeling in talking to the other partners is that they would be proceeding at a similar time frame. Obviously, one of the major proponents of this is the Department of Education. But I think what we could do is we'll have the community colleges up either next week or the week after. We'll ask them the same question. There's a possibility, more than a possibility, that we will act again on a Department of Ed budget sometime in the foreseeable future. And we could ask for that expectation there, or I could simply ask Mr. Bender to ask them in writing what their that might be best with the Department of Ed. Ask them in writing what their...
That would be preferable. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Bender, I'm assuming if we're still here in the early fall, when they come with their proposal, it doesn't have to go to EVOR.
Right. One of the small advantages to still being here in the early fall. Senator Winsett's looking like he doesn't want it. He doesn't think that's an advantage. please proceed, Mr. Bender.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If there are no further questions about Recommendation 5, I'll go ahead on to Recommendation 6. This is another policy package in the Governor's recommended budget for faculty recruitment and retention. It's Package 103 in the budget, and it appropriates $1 million of general fund to campuses for recruitment and retention of highly qualified faculty. We recommend that the funds be appropriated. They are included in the Senate Budget Chair's balanced budget proposal. And we do, though, recommend a technical adjustment in the package to reallocate a portion of the $1 million to the statewide public service programs. In the budget, all of the $1 million are appropriated to education in general. We recommend the adjustments that you see in that table, which would adjust the allocation so that it is apportioned based on the general fund support for faculty salaries in those four program areas, and make faculty recruitment and retention funds available to faculty for faculty positions that are financed from one of the statewide public service or combination of the statewide public service programs.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just to comment, I think the testimony indicated that $1 million is pretty inadequate. Really, it's just more symbolic than anything else. And if
goes back to the same question. Where do we want to put the money? Something symbolic or something substantive? I have an issue with this also. If we're going to do this, we have to put $10 million into it. Make it worthwhile.
To go ahead and proceed, and you do have a budget note.
Yes, I did want to mention at the top of page 5, there's a budget note associated with this recommendation. To clarify the expectations for the funding, we recommend that you approve a budget note that says that institutions shall use the funds allocated to them from the $1 million approved in this package for the purpose of recruitment and retention of highly qualified faculty.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a note looking back at the university system presentation from May 4th, what they told us then about the faculty recruitment and retention package is that the $1 million emphasizes the importance of recruiting and retaining top faculty. But to Senator Nelson's point, they also pointed out that they have a 6-year plan to bring OUS compensation to the average of similar institutions. So we still are left with a structural problem with regard to salaries, and this is but a pittance toward the problem, which is the point Senator Nelson was making.
I will also plan to share. I'll bring it to Mr. Bender. I asked the Chancellor for some information on faculty retention and recruitment, and I'll share that with the committee also. I think it gives you some pretty clear idea of some of the problems the university system has been having.
Please proceed. Are you done, Mrs. Senator Gordley?
Well, you know, the problem they've been having is that the legislature hasn't been providing the funding. which is also a structural problem that goes back to the inadequacy of our revenue gathering system. So, you know, if you want to get me started, you have.
Well, I'm actually trying to.
I understand.
Thank you, Senator Gordley, and I know that Senator Nelson would like to speak up about the utilization of natural resources. Mm-hmm. So.
Timber and water. Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson has a good point about this $1 million. I mean, what is this going to increase faculty salary? It couldn't. I mean, each faculty member would get $10. I mean,
no, it's a very complex question. This is actually very insignificant in the sense of the dollars. The dollars are relatively insignificant when you compare it to the need. In the package that we have in another budget, in terms of cost of living increases and things of that nature, some classified staff and others will share in whatever package their collective bargaining units and others agree to. But the issue of faculty salaries is one that we could probably devote 3 or 4 meetings on. Depending upon your preference of systems, we have some universities that their faculty are in collective bargaining units, and they receive some normal adjustments on a regular basis. And I'm going to get the chancellor up here wanting to share. Some universities where the dollars go to the universities and they go down to the departments, and then the departments make the individual decisions about what the level of compensation should be. We have a system that I'm not saying either system is preferable, but if we wanted to get into this, we could have an interim committee on it, to be honest. And I'm sure that actually it's one of the issues that the Board of Higher Education is spending quite a bit of time on. And maybe they'll come back with us with a more meaningful recommendation in the next session, should the governor allow them to present the recommendation to us. So, that. Senator Walker, is there any?
That's fine, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Item number 7, Mr. Bender.
Item number 7 refers to package 108 in the governor's recommended budget, the fee remission cap package. Last session, the legislature set a limit on fee remissions. There are two primary categories of fee remissions that are offered in the Oregon University system.
The first set are the graduate fee remissions, which are basically reductions or exemptions from tuitions and fee charges for graduate students who are doing work as a research or a teaching assistant. That is one type of fee remission. The other type of fee remissions are called programmatic fee remissions, and they are applied or offered to students not in exchange for any type of work activity, but they are offered to provide fee and tuition reductions to students for a variety of reasons, to help campuses manage enrollment, to offer discounts to students in financial need, and to increase diversity of the student body. There are a number of these different programs that are being offered. The last session, the legislature put a dollar limit on the graduate fee remissions and basically put a limitation on the programmatic fee remissions as well, but allowed those to be adjusted if enrollment growth so required. But they were limited to no more than 8% of the gross tuition revenue that the system was generating. This was not on a campus-by-campus basis, but a system-wide limitation. The governor recommended in Package 108 that restriction be relaxed and that fee remissions up to 10% of gross tuition revenue be allowed this biennium, with an understanding that the limitation will be eliminated starting in the 07-09 biennium. Our recommendation is that you concur with the governor's relaxation of the limit this biennium so that you eliminate the graduate fee remission limit entirely and that you increase the limit on programmatic fee remissions to 10% of gross tuition revenue. But we recommend that you defer any further changes in the programmatic fee remission limit to the 2007 legislative session so they can decide what the limit will be in 2007-09. Whether there'll be one.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Bender, your negatives, I'm trying to divide them up in equals two, you know. But in basis here, you're saying that the graduate fee remission will be retained and enlarged.
Yes, the fee remission program will be retained without limit.
And the undergraduate fee remission will be allowed to enlarge to 10% this biennium and then will have no limit the next biennium.
That was the governor's recommendation. Our recommendation is that you approve changing the limit to 10% this biennium without making any further changes for subsequent biennium. So it would stay at 10% unless the 2007 Legislative Assembly chose to adjust it further.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Recommendation 8 is a package in the governor's budget 109 that authorizes $20 million in other funds limitation and in certificates of participation to be issued for the purchase of information technologies, equipment, and systems. And there are a number of projects that are identified as information technology packages that would be purchased with these funds. LFO does recommend approval. This would require the $20 million other funds expenditure limitation that the package provides. Closely associated with package recommendation 8 is recommendation 9, which is certificates of participation debt service. This in the governor's in the budget is package 116, and what this does is this increases the non-limited other funds expenditure by $1,954,552 to show that 05-07 biennium debt service payments on the $20 million of COPs that are being approved. So this would represent the expenditures of the debt service, which are not limited in the budget.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm going to have to leave. I've expressed my displeasure with this budget all the way through, and I won't be able to take a vote on it, but if I was here, I would be a no vote. I apologize for the commitment that I have.
Well, we hope before this process is over,
So we will have a budget that should be a yes vote.
I thought our charge was things that were supposed to enhance those programs and do us some good. One of my senses were detracting from this program, that we're micromanaging, and that we're just in places we shouldn't be, and I just can't support this budget the way it is. There's several things, and I'll make those issues known to you as we go on.
Okay.
I appreciate your willingness to let me be excused.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Number 10, which will be controversial.
Number 10 is a package of the governor's budget, package 110, that provides $250,000 in general fund to support the operations of the Natural Resources Institute at Oregon State University. This package is not included in the Senate Chair's balanced budget proposal. We recommend that it be denied.
I don't remember the discussion, Mr. Chair, about this during our presentation. I don't have my notebook with me. Can you, Mr. Bender, give me a refresher on what this is?
I believe that there was not discussion on this particular, at least I don't recall it either, in the presentation. The Natural Resources Institute at OSU did receive funding this biennium of, I believe it was the same $250,000 amount, to support its operations, which are, I believe, to assist state government in certain natural resource issues. I don't know if there's anyone here who would have a more detailed explanation of the Institute's activities. But
one thing I might point out in this, since that budget has been done, this morning I believe you approved the Oregon University System budget in the House.
Correct.
In that budget, that $250,000 is approved, correct?
Correct.
So this will be an item for discussion before we get a final budget.
What is the impact, Mr. Chair, of the denial, Mr. Bender?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bender, or Mr.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gordley, Nancy Heiligman, Oregon University System. This would represent a reduction from the funding this biennium of $250,000 and would impact the ability of the program to provide policy support, research support to various state agencies in areas of natural resource management and sustainability.
Which state agencies, Mr. Chair, are you speaking of? And are there other options that those state agencies can turn to in the absence of the?
I don't have that kind of detail right now on that, Senator Gordley.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gordley, for the record, Thane Dutz, I'm director of the Oregon Agricultural Experiment Station at Oregon State University. this budget is not involved directly with the Ag Experiment Station, but many of our scientists work with the Institute in order to provide some of the data requested from some of the state agencies. State agencies such as the Watershed Enhancement Board, the Water Resources Department, occasionally the Department of Agriculture. There was grant funds have been brought into the university system through this institute and the Willamette River study that was accomplished with the University of Oregon and Oregon State University, and some people at Portland State were involved in that as well. So this institute is an OUS system. It's just housed at Oregon State University, and it involves a number of different universities and scientists involved in those universities. So that gives you the idea of the kind of agencies that the institute has worked with thus far.
Senator Gordley, my expectation is that this is basically the budget we're approving today as version 2 of the OUS budget. The House is approving version 2 of the OUS budget because their budget is different from their co-chair's budget also in some aspects. There will be a version 3, and I believe there will be some understanding reached on this particular budget item.
The just to gain some additional clarity, the $250,000 general fund is part of an existing budget that supports the Natural Resources Institute. Is that an accurate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Gordley, the funding was not included in the OUS budget during the current biennium. I'm not sure if it was an e-board item or if it came from another department, but the proposal was to transfer this funding to the OUS budget in this biennium.
What I'm trying to understand is if that $250,000 totally defunds the Natural Resources Institute or if there are other funds that allow the some of the work to carry forward.
There would be some funding, and I don't have that number, but this would severely limit and restrict their operations. And I do know that they were able to leverage in the neighborhood of $2 million in federal funds based on this $250,000 that they received in 2003-05.
So that capacity is lost. That's another impact.
That would be correct.
Mr. Chair, Bill McGee from DAS, one other point to add to this. The $250,000 is, in a sense, not new money. It was money that the governor identified from reductions in the natural resource agencies to help support the institute. So, in a sense, it's continuing the same funding level.
Thank you.
That's
it.
Okay.
Please proceed with this funding. The next item, or recommendation number 11, is the Forest Research Laboratory expenditure limitation increase. This is a package that is found in the higher education budget each biennium, and it refers to the major source of the other funds for the Forest Research Laboratory, which is the laboratory receives a portion of the receipts from the Forest Products Harvest Tax. Forest Products Harvest Tax is levied based on the volume of harvest. The current rate that goes to the Forest Research Lab is 67 cents per 1,000 board feet of harvest. The Forest Products Harvest Tax, the legislature renews for a two-year basis each biennium, and each biennium reconsiders the rates for the subsequent biennium. Package 112 would increase the limitation by $3,817,451, which would be the funds that would be generated if the Forest Products Harvest Tax extension is extended for another 2 years, and those receipts become available at the existing 67 cents per 1,000 board feet rate. So this does not actually expand the funding over the prior biennium. It just keeps the funding, you know, at the same level. Well, it would change with the harvest amount, but it keeps it at the same rate into this biennium. The bill to provide the revenues that would be spent under Package 112 is House Bill 2122. That's the bill that extends the sunset of the tax. And actually, the House Committee, Subcommittee, which reviewed this budget this morning, did hold a work session on that bill because that bill is in their possession at this point, and did vote to recommend that the 67 cents be extended for the next 2 years, thereby providing the revenue that is associated with this other funds limitation. We recommend that you approve this limitation with one adjustment for the reduction in the PERS rate. There's a slight $23,727 reduction in the limitation increase amount, with the understanding, of course, that if House Bill 2122 or a similar or a bill that does the same thing does not become law, this would become empty limitation and they wouldn't have the funds to spend. The next item, recommendation 12, is debt service on the Portland State University City Tower. The capital construction budget, which again you're not considering today, includes as one of its elements having the Portland State University acquire the City Tower 4th Avenue building from the City of Portland. The way that they were, in exchange for acquiring this, Portland State University would assume the debt service payments on bonds that the City of Portland issued in order to construct the building. And the debt service on these bonds in the 05-07 biennium would be $4,715,580. These are funded, these are not limited, these debt service payments are not limited, so these would be non-limited other funds that PSU would spend if you end up approving this in the capital construction project. You know, we have a situation, we have to deal with these in separate bills, and the timing, you haven't dealt with that yet. Nonetheless, we recommend that you approve this. It's just a adjustment in non-limited funds. If, indeed, when you do the capital construction project, you deny the authority for Portland State to purchase this building, this amount would still be in their budget, but they wouldn't actually have to make those, they wouldn't have to make those expenditures if they don't acquire the building.
Next item.
The next item is package 813 and includes a set of program reductions that are in the Senate budget plan in order to help balance the overall state general fund budget. Our recommendation is that you approve these, and there are five of them, and combined together, they result in, they would have a general fund appropriation reduction of just under $8.9 million. And an other funds expenditure limitation increase of just under $5.2 million. And these are the five adjustments that are being recommended that are components of the totals that I just mentioned. The first is a reduction in the Chancellor's Office budget of $700,000 general fund and five positions. What this represents is an element that is in the governor's recommended budget that restores funding for certain positions and expenditures that were eliminated in the roll-up of the Board of Higher Education's reductions that they have implemented in the Chancellor's Office budget this biennium. So this would have restored some of those, and that amount is not supported in the Senate plan. The next item of reductions are to eliminate general fund support for the Western Undergraduate Exchange, the WUE program, and the fee remission equity targeted programs in the resource allocation model. The elimination of those two targeted programs would reduce general fund by $1,647,776 and eliminate five positions. The two programs, the fee remission equity program, was identified by the department as its lowest priority for general fund support. The Western Undergraduate Exchange program is another targeted program that this would eliminate support for this, and the campuses would have to decide whether they wanted to remain in this program without this specific support in their budget or not.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm missing a connection here. Need Mr. Binder's help to draw the connection between this fee remission decision and the earlier fee remission cap decision in package 108. What is the relationship?
There is no direct relationship. The fee remission cap limits the amount of fee remissions that institutions can offer their students. The fee remissions are just discounts on their tuition bills. The fee remission equity program is a general fund program that provides funds to various campuses to help them transition from the prior distribution model of funds that was in place before the RAM was adopted in, I forget now, 1999? Yeah. So this was to help institutions transition beginning in 1999 to the new RAM system where the where the tuition income was no longer pooled amongst all seven institutions. This was viewed by OUS as a transition program to help institutions transition to the new system. And while I'm sure they would appreciate continuing to have the money, this was their lowest priority at this point. And the co-chairs, actually in both House and Senate, did not continue to fund this program.
Thank you, Mr. Binder. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next.
The next item is a $1 million reduction in general fund support for what are known as campus public service programs. This would also be an elimination of five positions. Campus public service programs are programs offered by campuses that aren't directly related to their educational mission. These aren't credit courses. These are various types of programs. The $1 million reduction, it's identified that there are certain programs receiving these funds that are not to take part in the reduction. And the programs that are protected from the $1 million reduction are the Labor Education and Research Center at the University of Oregon, the Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory at Oregon State University, and the Saturday Academy, MESA, Population Research Center, and Dispute Resolution Programs, all housed at Portland State University.
I might point out in this that the Senate co-chair previously had planned a $2.8 million reduction in this area, and now it's been lowered to $1 million, and the $1 million reduction is the same amount as the House reduction at this time. There may be some details that still need to be worked out in a final version of this bill that we're still working on.
I did also, Mr. Chair, want to mention that I would point out places where this memo differs from the draft memo you got yesterday, and the identification of the specific programs here, I had failed to put that in the draft memo, but these are, this is added to identify programs that would not be reduced, general fund would not be reduced.
Mr. Bender, Mr. Chair, it's my understanding a dispute resolution program is split between PSU and University of Oregon.
That is correct. The University of Oregon does not provide any support for their dispute resolution program from this source of funds.
From this source of
correct.
Funds.
Correct.
And we will have that budget. We will have that bill soon.
Speaking of which, we have a bill.
Yes.
It needs to move. Thank you.
The next element of the package 813 reductions are a general fund reduction of $5,118,500. This was a fund shift from other funds to general fund in the governor's budget relating to funding for information technology purchases. This requires a little explanation. Last session, when the budget situation, the state faced a very difficult budget situation, the legislature cut $5 million in general fund that was designated for information technology, and in lieu of that, allowed $5 million of certificates of participation to be issued to provide funding for those purchases instead of general fund. And that was understood to be a one-time adjustment. When the governor put the budget together, his recommendation together, he restored the funds with a small adjustment for cost increases back to the general fund. So that's why it's $5,118,500 are now restored and back to a general fund. The co-chairs looked at this and concluded that, again, this was a situation, we're in a situation where it is not, they cannot include that as general fund in the budget this time around either. So They are recommending that that be that general fund amount, $5,118,500, be reduced or eliminated from the budget, but that instead, in this case, you do permit, again, as was the case last time, certificates of participation to be issued to support that amount of expenditures. So there would be $5,118,500 other funds increase to allow the COP proceeds to be spent. Senator Whitson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bender, then essentially, rather than spending current money, we're going to borrow it.
Exactly.
Thank you.
And the last item is a $400,000 reduction in support for the Oregon Joint Schools of Professional Business. That would also be one FTE. What the Oregon Joint Schools of Professional Business do is they coordinate an executive MBA programs that are offered, I think, exclusively, but maybe just primarily in the Portland metropolitan area.
Item 14
are a set of program restorations that are included in the committee chair's balanced budget proposal, and they total an increase of $11.6 million in general fund and are distributed into four categories of additional funds. The first is a restoration in funding, or to increase general fund support in the Education and General Services Program for undergraduate education. The funding for undergraduate education has been reduced over the last several biennia as the state has dealt with its financial problems. And indeed, there's an additional reduction even in the governor's recommended budget from the prior biennium level in the proposal this time. What this will do is it increases general fund support for undergraduate education by $4.9 million. The funds, the way that they would be distributed is as the other undergraduate education funds are, and that is to say they're distributed through the cell values and the resource allocation model, so they're essentially distributed based on the enrollments of the institutions, the enrollments of resident undergraduate students among the seven institutions. So that would be a $4.9 million restoration in funds to them. The budget also includes a second $4.9 million to support costs associated with enrollment growth. These funds will be distributed to campuses on the basis by which their projected fundable enrollment exceeds what their actual fundable enrollment is this year. So the institutions that are experiencing growth in the next biennium will be eligible for these additional funds to help support the costs of that growth that are not being fully covered by the tuition that the new students are bringing in. The third element of the restoration is an additional $1.3 million to help offset some of the reductions in the governor's budget to the Agricultural Experiment Station. That would allow the station to increase its positions by five over what it would have been without this. And there's also a $500,000 increase to the extension service and associated two positions.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
It's interesting how we can call one thing a decrease and one thing an increase. In general, I understand your point here, Mr. Bender, but could you be a little more specific on the extension service, that $500,000 that would be reestablished in their budget? How will that restore their budget compared to the last biennium and the 2001-03 budget?
We expect that the budget would be would not allow them to continue all of their it's not a full restoration. The department, the extension service, would operate at a smaller level of activity in 2005-07. They would have essentially $58 million
from a combination of general fund and the other funds. We heard earlier about some of the other fund issues. They would have $58 million this biennium compared to $61 million in the 03-05 biennium. So there would be still be a reduction in funding, and that, of course, does not... that's in actual dollars. That doesn't account for cost increases from one biennium to the other. So this would not restore all of the positions. We estimate here, it's estimated that the total number of positions that the Extension Service is funding this biennium on a full-time equivalency basis are about 418. This would have... by LFO estimates, this is not the department's estimates on this number I'm going to give you now, about 409 personnel would be funded.
It would not only not restore the number of FTEs in the funding, it would continue to decrease the number of FTEs in funding.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Please proceed.
The final recommendation relating to, before we get to the performance measures, is a recommendation relating to tuition and fee adjustments. Again, as I previously mentioned, the governor's recommended budget we're making changes to does support tuition and fee increases. Tuition increases for resident undergraduates are supported of 6.8% the first year of the biennium, and 5% the second year of the biennium. As you know, the co-chair's budget included funds to finance a tuition freeze for resident undergraduate students. That has been changed, and the Senate budget plan now contains the following elements in it. It contains $17,250,000 to allow the tuition and resource fee increases to be limited to 3% the first year of the biennium and 3% the second year of the biennium. What the $17.25 million does is it replaces with general fund the tuition and fee revenues that will not be realized because the increases would be at 3 and 3 instead of at 6.8 and 5. These percentage increases are an average basis. They are not on a campus-by-campus basis, but overall the rate increases averaged out for all resident undergraduate students would be limited to this amount. And I should note here, I put in a parenthetical comment here because it's not related to the budget before you today, but as part of this change in the Senate budget plan that reduced the funding for the tuition freeze and thereby is now allowing a 3% increase per year, $6,450,000 is now become available, that was not available earlier, for supplementing the opportunity grant program above the level that was in the co-chair's budget that was earlier released. So that is something that will be available to you when you take up that budget again, the Oregon Student Assistance Commission budget.
There?
Yes.
Mr. Bender, could you compare that $26.6 million in opportunity grants to what is in the House budget now for the same purpose?
The House budget does not have this addition in it for the opportunity grants. So if you're looking entirely at the opportunity grants, they have an addition of approximately $21.15 million, roughly, over the essential budget level, whereas under the Senate plan, you would have $6,450,000 more than the House does.
Thank you, sir.
For opportunity grants. Also, as part of Recommendation 15, we do recommend that you adopt or approve the budget note that's shown at the top of page 8. The reason why we recommend that you do this is you do not have authority in this bill to actually limit tuition rates. The State Board of Higher Education has statutory authority to set those rates.
But you are provide, or you would be, if you approve this, providing money so that those rates could be, the increases could be moderated. As a direction to the State Board of Higher Education, we recommend you approve a budget note that says the approved budget includes $17.25 million of general fund to limit tuition and resource fee, including the energy surcharge fee, increases to resident undergraduate students. The resource fees are other fees that are mandatory that students pay that are combined with tuition to help support the academic programs along with the state general fund. Total system-wide resident undergraduate tuition revenue may not increase by more than 3% in the 05-06 academic year and 3% in the 06-07 academic year. Changes in tuition and resource fee revenues attributable to growth or decline in resident undergraduate enrollment are not factored into this limit, so it's only a change in the rate. And the State Board of Higher Education may allocate the general fund monies provided to campuses in a manner that it determines to be in the best interest of the Oregon University system. The subcommittee further expects the department to limit the resource fee, including the energy surcharge fee revenues, to no more than 9.1% of gross tuition revenue. That's the current limitation. It would be extending it in percentage terms into the next biennium. And also make note that the 17.25 is calculated to be enough money to allow that limitation of 9.1% to hold without them losing any revenues. For your information, there is the House budget plan also has a tuition freeze or tuition limit in it. The tuition limitation that they approved this morning is 3.25% the first year of the biennium and 3.5% the second year of the biennium. So if you approve this, your tuition increases would be somewhat less than they would be under the House plan.
We went through now the first 15 recommendations. And at this point, the chair would entertain a motion to approve all 15 LFO recommendations to this point, including any budget notes.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any discussion of the motion?
Mr. Chair, on the last budget note issue, I just wanted to thank Mr. Bender for making sure in the budget note we included the energy surcharge fee. I think testimony was there's only about 3 campuses still doing that, but that needs to be part of the overall scheme of what they're charging students.
Hopefully we will have a more efficiently heated Oregon State University in a couple of years. Senator Whitson.
Chair, there's obviously been a lot of work and effort and good work gone into this budget. I won't be able to support it at this time. There's a number of reasons, but the two that I want to bring out is, the first is that I think on the first page here we get a very good example of the structural budget deficit problem we have in the state. We're seeing the OUS budget go up 20% per biennium, and we're seeing the number of employees go down, and we're seeing that throughout the education system. The inflationary cost within their education system is simply going up much faster than our state's revenues ability to pay for it, and this is something that we have to address. Second thing, we have a situation here where the co-chair's budget continues to target the destruction of the extension services. I know this is perceived as an urban-rural divide issue, but when we study the actual services provided by the extension service, there are more urban families are served than rural families by this essential service, and yet we're just dismantling it. So whether it's being taken apart because there's a minority, it's perceived that there's a minority of people actually being served by it, by that misconception, or whether it's being taken apart for other reasons, certainly in my district it's an essential service, and I think if you were to poll a number of urban areas, you'd find that a great deal more 4-H kids are in urban areas than they are in rural areas, and in any number of their programs that are more focused on urban areas now.
I respect your positions, Senator Whitson.
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Walker.
Mr. Bender, you indicated that in the Senate budget we were adding the extra money into the Oregon Opportunity Grant. And then when you talked about the House budget, they're at a 3.25 and a 3.5 tuition-free, so to speak. Did they take their money, likewise, that they saved and put that into the Oregon Opportunity Grant, or did they put it in other areas?
They put it in a different area. They also used part of it to freeze tuitions. They didn't spend as much to lower the tuition rate increase.
Right.
They didn't spend as much, and that's why their tuition rates are going up higher than they are under your budget. They also, though, allocated $5.1 million to campuses to allow them to increase their fee remission programs based on need by that amount without losing any money. So under their proposal, there would be additional fee remissions based on need in the Oregon University system of $5.1 million.
And Senator Walker, to be fair, our savings from going from a freeze to 3%, we allocated the savings from that approximately $4.9 million to enrollment growth, $4.9 million to undergraduate education, and the remainder to as money that is set aside that we will hope to add, we plan to add, to the Oregon Student Assistance Commission budget for the purposes of enhancing opportunity grants. So that's where we are.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a couple of comments. I'm thinking about what Senator Whitsitt has just said, and I don't want that to get by us without a comment because it's a very important observation on his part. I think that we are challenged and we need to look at where and how our funding decisions at the end of the day may be contributing to disparities in funding, access, programs, just opportunity in general for rural Oregon. I don't know that we have thoughtfully asked ourselves that question when it comes to funding in general, looking at whether we are making public policy decisions backed up by funding decisions that kind of further exacerbate the divide as we know it. And so again, I think that Senator Whitsitt put something in front of us that we need to take a deeper look at before we sine die as it relates to this budget. But I think it's a question that should be asked about many of our budgets. With that said, I'm just going to say again, but briefly, that this budget provides another example of just how inadequate all of our budgets are going to be in this session. And again, it points up the inadequacy of the revenue system that we currently have, a revenue system that prohibits us from making the kind of investments in all of public education, pre-K through higher ed, that are required to meet the needs of our students and our citizenry. That's our challenge. It will be our challenge after we sine die, because clearly this isn't a body speaking collectively that has the will to address the structural inadequacies in our system. We don't have that will. We've demonstrated that, unless something changes tomorrow. with that said, I want to thank Mr. Bender. I continue to be amazed and very appreciative of your thorough, detailed analysis of these budgets and the quality of support that you provide to us as we do this work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can we have the roll? We have a vote to approve the first 15 LFO recommendations.
Senator Bornay?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitsitt?
No.
Chair Devlin?
Aye. Motion passes. Now we will go on to the 16th recommendation, which is on the performance measures. We have seen the performance measures before. One of the differences, though, that you see now is that the agency has, for some of the areas, applied actual targets. So Mr. Bender will.
This is the listing of performance measures. This is the format that the budget committees are using this session to approve performance measures for agencies for the upcoming biennium. And as the chair mentioned, you've seen a lot of information from the university system on their performance measures. They are one of the state agencies that has the most developed performance measure system. What we have listed here is listed them in the order of basically on which they were approved last time. And if you look in column 9, you'll see LFO recommendations as to whether to retain these, whether to add or modify or develop new ones, or whether to delete them. Another item, delete, keep internally, which I'd like to explain in a bit, in just a minute, what that means. What this listing does is just to clarify, for situations where there are targets here, the targets are those that were proposed by the department. So we are not recommending any changes in the target levels from those that they have proposed. For the items that do not have targets, usually there, if you look in column 9, you'll see that either these are not being kept as performance measures or they're just new and targets haven't been developed yet. That should be the case, hopefully, in all of the cases where you don't see any targets. Before I go into detail, I just would like to say that the LFO recommendation would be for you to
approve. Mr. keep in mind you have about 6 to 8 minutes for detail at this point.
Oh, that's right. I'm thinking another half hour.
both Senator Whitson and I have Judiciary Committee approval.
I apologize, yes. For the cases where there aren't targets, or for the cases where the measure is noted as developmental, the request is that you ask the agency to report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee prior to August 1st during this upcoming interim to get targets and or actual measures where they're not developed yet approved. So that's a process that's being used for performance measures throughout the state government. Generally, these are the recommendations of the co-chairs or you or of the agency as to any changes or deletions or additions. There are a couple instances where our recommendation is slightly different, where the co-chairs may have recommended dropping a measure, but we are recommending that you ask or direct the institutions to maintain them. There are a number of ones here that are labeled delete, keep internally. For example, if you look on page 1, the third performance measure for the number and percent of undergraduates who are students of color, this is a performance measure that we're recommending that they delete and keep internally. The reason for this is not in every case where it's delete, keep internally. Well, what we mean when it's delete, keep internally is that it's not a particular performance measure, and therefore there would not be particular targets that would be set. But the information would be kept and presented as a part of the budget presentation to the Legislative Assembly each legislative session. In this particular case, the reason why we are recommending that it be deleted as a performance measure is concerns that the department expressed to us that The act of setting targets for this particular measure, which would be required for any performance measure, about targets, they were concerned about legal implications with federal law of doing so. So in this particular case, we recommend that they continue to report through their affirmative action report on their progress in serving students of color, but that this not be made, kept as a form of performance measure. In other cases, for example, on page 2, where you see delete, keep internally, number of undergraduates enrolled, there is not a specific legal concern about setting targets for that, but the co-chairs did recommend that that be deleted because it's more of an output measure as opposed to an outcome to show how well the institution, the department is performing. I know you're short of time. I'd be happy to respond to any questions about specific recommendations here.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just a couple of comments on the third item on page 1, which is the number and percent of undergraduates who are students of color. These are my thoughts about how we go forward. First of all, let's all remember that the Oregon Progress Board has pointed out to us in their research on the progress of Oregon's racial and ethnic populations, meaning Latino, African American, Asian, Native American, that over a 10-year period of time, including that boom, that so-called boom time period in the 90s, Oregon's people of color populations lost ground. And that their most recent report, I'm referring to the 2002 or 2003 report, also points out that when you look at college entrance, that it is the Latino students who are least likely, or they're the ones who are falling behind in access to college opportunity. And so there are challenges there that need to be addressed, systematically, programmatically, and we all need to understand that that's a problem that where we need to be creating some opportunities for a lot of young people. Now, with that said, we do need a way of measuring our progress or reflecting on what is our progress or not. I understand, after having talked to folks in the university system, that there are some legal constraints around keeping information that suggests we're targeting. But we need to understand that we are going to expect the university system to report regularly on the kind of progress that is being made, what efforts are behind the progress or lack thereof. And I guess the other thing that's really important is that if there are legal constraints around how we can talk about targets, benchmarks, then I want to see that in writing. I want to if there's a legal opinion that has been received from someone representing the Oregon University system, let's see that in writing. Let's all understand what those constraints are so we're all speaking from the same page and the same language, but also, again, from an understanding that the university system is very committed to increasing diversity of its students, increasing diversity of faculty. I believe that's a commitment. I believe that the university system has accepted that as a challenge. But again, let's get the legal piece in writing, and then let's also have the understanding that there will be the regular reporting of progress. I hope I'm making myself clear about what I would expect to see.
Mr. Chancellor, I think you can consider that an official request.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't see anything in any of these performance measures about sexual harassment. Given the lengthy article, in-depth stories done in the Statesman Journal in response by the Chancellor, I would think that we would put a performance measure in here to see how our universities are dealing with sexual harassment. The other issue was one that arose on my campus in the University of Oregon about faculty diversity. So we might want to add something about those issues, too.
Well, we'll put those as notes. Hopefully we'll get another shot at this budget. I know we will get another shot at this budget, to be honest. And I'll forward those comments to the chair of the Senate committee. We need a motion to approve Recommendation 16. And I don't know if Mr. Bender covered this, but it contains the normal language that we've included in practically everything to report to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee. Some of the aspects that are incomplete at this point. Is there such a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
It's been moved to approve Recommendation 16. Any additional discussion?
I have a question for Senator Walker. Senator Walker, on page 4, the next to last key performance measure reads number and percent of full-time ranked instructional faculty who are faculty of color. Is that what you are looking for?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we've got that one taken care of, but I don't see anything in here about sexual harassment.
Information to be kept internally.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we've talked about it previously.
Okay.
I'll make some inquiries about that and see what we can do.
Okay.
I mean, we can make that part of the... We will get a second runaround on this budget, I'm sure. Shouldn't really call it a runaround. That doesn't sound very positive.
runaround.
We call the roll.
Senator
Gordley?
Aye.
Senator
Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitson? Aye. Senator Devlin? Aye. Okay. If people will stand by for just 30 seconds, I will confer with Mr. Bender. We will accept a motion now to approve the SB 56 oath. Well, we will accept a motion to recommend to the full Senate Special Committee SB 5603 as amended and modified by the LFO recommendations, including the budget notes and including the performance measures. Is there such a motion?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gordley. Any additional discussion? Seeing none, will you please call the roll? Thank you.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. I will carry to the floor.
Both.
Okay. Well, I think we stay here for another 20 minutes. You have a judiciary committee. You don't really want to go there. The committee is adjourned until, I should say something for the record, either next Monday or next Tuesday. We will be meeting both days, but even Monday or Tuesday, we will be considering 4 bills, all in the same committee hearing. 2 of those bills are of some controversy. That would be a fair statement. As soon as I can get the agenda approved, you will receive it. But be prepared when you come in Monday or Tuesday. We will have probably relatively short public hearings on these bills. They've all had public hearings in their respective policy committees, and we will be going into work session on the bills.
get some idea of what bills those will be, sir?
Yes, I can. I actually don't like to keep any secrets, to be honest. The first bill will be a bill relative to the educational service districts. The next bill will be a bill relative to pooling of health care. The third bill will be relative to ending fund balances in school districts. And the fourth bill will be relative to the creation of a virtual school district. The two that are controversial are the pooling.
Wait a minute.
But with that, we are adjourned.